I want to play this little clip for you from Mad Money that was on the other day. Take a listen.
Tony from Washington. Tony!
Hey, I'm a new investor. I've got $1,000 to start investing and about $200 a month for additional purchases. Do I focus on one stock, only buying a few shares at a time? Or do I buy various stocks to diversify my portfolio, even though I'd only get one this month, one next month, and so on?
Okay, I have hard and fast rules. This is not what people want to hear. Until you saved up $10,000, I want that money in an index fund. I think individual stocks are too risky. I do not believe that when you have just starting out, that you should start out with individual stocks. You should start out with index funds. When you get to $10,000, then we can start making some money. But this is a Mad Money show, and the best way to get to Mad Money is to start with regular money, and that's an index fund until $10,000.
So how about that? Jim Cramer told the caller, until she gets $10,000, she should invest in index funds. Well, what I want to know is, where does the number $10,000 come from? Where, would you just pull that out of the air? Is that some scientifically measured number that everyone should meet? Does it apply to you? Does it apply to her? Why not $20,000? Why not $50,000? Why not $100,000? Why not $1 million? And then once you get beyond $3 million, then you can play with Mad Money. I think that's where I come down. Did you hear the part in there where he said stocks are too risky? And did you hear the part in there where he's talking about regular money? Maybe that's what I should retitle this show. Regular Money Machine. Regular Money Machine. Show 113. End of May. Hello, everyone. This is Paul Douglas Boyer of the Mad Money Machine. Thank you so very much for downloading to your iPod, to your computer. And does anyone really download to their Zune? If you're listening on a Zune, would you email me? Just send me a little email or something. Call me even, 206-734-4763, and let me know. If I don't hear from anybody who listens on a Zune, then I'll stop saying Zune. Maybe you're listening on an iPhone. I should substitute that in, iPhone. Anyway, this is Paul Douglas Boyer. Like I said, welcome to the Mad Money Machine, sponsored by Index Funds Advisors. Before I get anywhere, I want to ask you, the listener. I've put a survey up at the madmoneymachine.com website, and if you would please go to madmoneymachine.com, and in the second column at the top, it says New, take the MMM survey. You click on that, there's about 20 questions. Now, if you scroll all the way down in that webpage, you'll see the responses other people have put into the survey. Maybe you even want to read those before you fill it out. I don't know. You don't have to. If you would fill that out for me, please, it will help me get a better idea of who you are and what you're expecting in the Mad Money Machine show and how I can tailor this to better suit your interests. I thank you so much, everybody who's already filled that out. I look to get a lot more entries in that. Let's look at some of the predictions from show 92. I said that David Beckham would take an increasing role, that the designated players in soccer would help boost the league's image. Well, guess what? Last week, LA Galaxy played Kansas City, I believe it was, and LA Galaxy was leading 2-1 until the final minutes, extended time. Kansas City had a corner kick. The goalkeeper for Kansas City came all the way up. They kicked the corner kick. It bounced to David Beckham, who took the shot from 70 yards and smacked it right in the center of the goal. That's the shot heard round the world. Everybody that watches soccer and ESPN in the world probably saw that goal and sees Beckham playing in the MLS now. Another prediction, Ron Paul will do better than expected. Well, guess what? He got 24% of the vote in Idaho. Another prediction, Ben Bernanke will resign. Well, guess what? There was another, a different Fed governor resigned. Governor Frederick Mishkin will step down August 31st and return to academia, the Fed announced last Wednesday. Well, the Fed board already has two vacant seats, and the term of another governor, Randall Krosner, expired in January, though he's expected to stay on until his successor is named, according to the Wall Street Journal. Do I get half credit for that prediction coming true? Back to soccer for a second. Next year's new team in MLS, the Seattle Sounders, already has a sponsorship on their jerseys. Several million dollars will come to the team from Microsoft, and on the front of their jerseys it will say Xbox 360 Live. Now, DC United just got a sponsorship, and they have a VW logo on their jerseys. What do you think about inflation? The Fed's numbers say, no, there's not really any significant inflation. The CPI, Consumer Price Index, went up, what, 0.1%, 0.2% or something. Well, have you ordered a soft drink at in a restaurant recently? What is the deal with that? $1.95 for a soft drink? And I've seen some places charge $2.50 now for a soft drink. Holy cow. You know, if they keep going, they're really going to push a lot of people to drink more ice water. Scientists have discovered there is, in fact, global warming, not only on Earth, but also on Jupiter and Mars. I just saw in the Wall Street Journal, yeah, I keep reading that thing online, there was a book review for a book called The ETF Strategist, and it's just now being released at Amazon.com, written by Russ Kosterich, who works for, no surprise, Barclays. Don't know if he has a role in the ETFs at Barclays or not. I expect so. And the book apparently talks about how it is possible to build an entire portfolio of ETFs and fine-tuning it and adjusting for your risk tolerance. Should be interesting. I got several calls to the Madman Machine voicemail line at 206-734-4763. Program that into your cell phone now so you can call me whenever you get an idea. I got a call from Paul that says, do get a Mac, don't go Vista. Got a call from Dave that says he's got the Mad Mortgage Machine podcast, madmortgagemachine.com. And I got a call from Douglas that says go Ubuntu, go Linux. And yeah, so I've installed Linux before. I think Red Hat is the last one I used. And, I think when this computer dies, or when Windows gets old on it and I get a new Mac, I will probably load up Linux on it just for the fun of it. So I'm going golfing tomorrow. And one of the things that I spend a lot of time doing on the golf course is looking for the golf ball. I'm talking about even when I hit it in the middle of the fairway sometimes, I still have to go looking for the thing. For some reason, they don't just pop up and tell you where they are. Well, why don't they pop up and tell you where they are? With all the technology we've got now, you know, you can go through a toll booth at 60 miles an hour and they'll get your money all right. Why can't they put a RFID chip inside of a golf ball and then help you locate it with electronics, right? And you could use your iPhone to locate the ball. Right on the screen, there'd be like a little radar display. You know, you can move the iPhone around and it would show right on the display how close you are to your golf ball. They could call it the eyeball. Get it? And maybe when you get within range, it'll play a certain song. Maybe like this one. Lord, I've been searching, trying to find myself. Everyone I'm finding, there's always someone else. Cause I've been bruised and broken for so long, trying to find my way, but I'm too far gone. Well, we finally got our Verizon phone service switched over to Vonage, one V for another V. And I've got to say, it sounds pretty good so far. Everything seems to work. Caller ID works coming in, caller ID works going out. We kept our same phone number, and we remain unlisted. But it all seems to work, and I'm pretty happy. Now I'll let you know what happens on the bill. See, here's what might happen. Verizon might decide that I'm no longer on one of their preset plans and raise the prices on the, all the other stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And then Vonage, are they going to sneak in any extra fees? Are they going to claim that I need to pay local tax, county tax, state tax, federal tax, this and that surcharge onto my monthly bill? I'm hoping not. Hoping that's all included. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. I've got to talk about some more charts from Index Funds Advisors. These are fantastic. And these charts compare one kind of portfolio versus another kind of portfolio over different rolling time periods. Okay. And it's monthly returns over rolling time periods for the past 80 years. For example, in Figure 9.9, what they have, what they show here, they're comparing a small value portfolio of stocks versus a small growth portfolio of stocks. Which one wins? Which has been the winner over different time periods, different rolling time periods over the past 80 years? So if we take all 80 years of data and we slice it up into 1 year spans, okay, you'd think you'd have 80 time periods of data over 80 years. Well, no, because you shift it by just 1 month at a time. Okay. And so if you go over 80 years and you shift rolling 1 year time periods just 1 month at a time, it turns out you can have 949 1 year periods. It's basically, it's almost like 12 times 80 in the sense. And for 1 year periods, if you looked at any contiguous 12 months in the entire 80 years of small value versus small growth over 1 year periods, small value beats small growth about two-thirds of the time. So that means one-third of the time, small growth beat small value in this chart, okay? Ah, but don't just look at rolling one-year time periods. Let's also look at other rolling time periods. So let's take 3 years at a time now. And we can see that over three-year periods, small value beats small growth almost three quarters of the time, 73% of the time. But small growth beats small value a quarter of the time over 3 year periods, any 3 year period in the last 80 years. And then we go to 5 year periods. And then we go to 10 year periods, any 10 year period in the past 80 years. Then we go to 15 year periods. And finally, we get to 20 year periods. You take any 20-year period, there are 721 of them in the past 80 years. And what you'll see is amazingly on this chart is that over any 20-year period, the chances of small value beating small growth is 93.8%. All right. Now, it is shown in the chart that small growth did beat small value 6% of those rolling 20-year periods. Well, there are other comparisons. There's large growth versus small growth. There's S&P 500 versus treasury bills. And that's an interesting one. Do you think stocks beat bonds? Well, over any one-year period, the percentage of time that bonds beat stocks was 31.8%. How's about that, huh? You're invested in the S&P 500. You think you're going to do well. But T-bills beat you 31.8% of the time over a one-year period. All right. But we go to three-year periods, the chances decrease of T-bills winning. Five-year periods, they decrease. 15-year periods, it's down to 5%. But look at the 20-year period. It shows on here that 0% of the time that T-bills over a 20-year period outperform the S&P 500. And we can keep going on and on with these comparisons. They're fascinating. I'll pick one more, and that is the Index Portfolio 100 constructed at IFA. This is a mixture that is small cap weighted and value weighted. and it compares that versus the S&P 500. All right, just the large cap U.S. stocks. And it shows that over a one-year, on rolling one-year periods, the IFA Index Folio 100 beat the S&P 500 just 56% of the time. A three-year period, it's still almost a coin flip, 60% chance of beating S&P 500 in the past 80 years, all right. Then you get to five-year periods, it's 64%. 10-year periods, it's 70%. So even in a 10-year period, S&P 500 beat the IFA portfolio 30% of the time. But what about 15-year periods? Now it's only 20% of the time. One in five. And in 20-year periods, the S&P 500, out of the past 80 years, there are 721 monthly rolling 20-year periods, you know, shifting each month, right? 20 years at a time, you just shift it one month. The S&P 500 only beat the index portfolio 100 11% of the time. When you add it all up and you look at this, you've got to say, what is your time horizon for investing and where should you invest? The answer is clear. Your time horizon should be 20 or more years, and you should be invested in a portfolio that weights more heavily, but not completely, but more heavily towards small cap companies and value companies. These charts are fantastic. Go take a look at them. Go take a look at them all. I have a link to them in the show notes of this show. That's the tool in the crib this week. Comparison charts between asset classes. And like most of the other tools I've given you so far, this one is free. The best things in life are free. You can keep it for the birds and bees. Now give me money. Now give me money, 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 money. That's what I want.
Okay, Paul, so now I will seek your advice. Question for you. I am starting an IRA, Roth IRA, for my daughter, who was just turned one recently. And so if you follow the rule of seven, that money doubles roughly every 7 years based on a nominal return percentage, which I forget off the top of my head what that percent is, then when she retires 65 oh so years from now, that $2,000 initial IRA will be worth $1 million when she retires. So we went ahead and set that up. Now, obviously, you can't start a Roth in her name because she has no earned income. So I do it in my name, and I leave her as the sole beneficiary, so she'll get that money when she retires. My question to you is this. What do you invest that in that's a safe, low risk, yet will get market returns, 7-8%, over the next 65 years to obtain that $1 million goal? Do you just put it in the Vanguard Total Market Fund? Do you split it amongst a couple other Vanguard emerging markets and or just an S&P 500 proxy? Since it is only $2,000, you can only divide it so many ways. So what is your recommendation, given that you have all these lazy portfolios out there and such, as to what to do? Because obviously IFA isn't a solution either. So with this small amount that will grow to some great big amount, what are your thoughts and comments? We'd love to hear from them. If you haven't figured it out, by the way, this is David at the Fast Money Machine, and love to hear from you, and love for you to help my daughter grow her money so when she's 65 and I eventually kick the bucket, she'll have a nice sum. Start young. That's the name of the game for sure, and that's what we're going to do. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, David. You know, it's kind of interesting. You mentioned that you're looking for something that's low risk. All right. I'm wondering if that's really what you want to do. If you've got 65 years to invest, it seems to me like you have a capacity for fairly large risk at the beginning, at least. And obviously, you're not going to need the money for 65 years. So if you lose some in the beginning, you have a chance of making it up later by continuing to add into the portfolio, all the while investing in the same amount of risk. You know, one thing you could actually do is take the risk capacity survey at ifa.com with this particular portfolio in mind, answering all the questions there according to when do you need to withdraw the money, how much money are you going to have in the fund, how much money do you need out of the fund, this sort of stuff. And you might come to the conclusion that you can invest in higher risk than what you at first imagined. So So how do you invest in higher risk then? You weight your portfolio more towards small cap, more towards value stocks, more towards emerging market stocks, and perhaps even more towards the REITs. But how do you do that with $2,000? Well, I mentioned the PowerShares fund of funds. That sounds like that could be an approach with that kind of money. It's broadly diversified. Ticker symbol on the high-risk one is PTO. You could certainly invest in a Vanguard Total Stock Market Index, and you'd get market returns. But what about starting out for the first 30 years in a emerging market index, or a combination of an emerging market and a REIT, or a international small cap value fund, for example, these single higher risk funds? If you can imagine where you end up on the reward versus risk chart, you know, along the efficient frontier, you're going to be out there towards the right of risk. You're going to be out at 15 or 20% annualized standard deviation. Ah, but you're going to be compensated for your risk by having a higher return. So instead of investing in, you know, Berkshire Hathaway stock, you could invest in a basket of stocks from emerging market countries, for example, and get about the same return, expected return, for the amount of risk that you're taking on. And then as you add, as the portfolio either gains money or you add money into the portfolio, then you start rebalancing into the other asset classes to bring down the risk a little bit. That's a really interesting question. It's a really interesting puzzle. How do you invest for 65 years? And I can imagine that you start out with a fairly high risk portfolio, and then as you get closer and closer, you say within 20 years of the expected withdrawal date, then you bring the portfolio back down in risk, back into safety. You know, you start putting money aside into bonds, you start putting more of it into the whole market. That's why we continue to take the risk capacity survey year after year to determine where we should be investing. You know, I had this question a few months back from Jim. He wanted to know how he could get a higher risk portfolio for his daughter's IRA. How could you go beyond IFA Index Folio 100? How could you make a portfolio 120 or a 150 or a 200, assuming you could take on that much risk? And the answer I came to at the time was load up your portfolio on small cap and value, international, emerging markets, and at the expense of large cap growth and U.S. domestic. I hope I'm around to find out how it works out for you, David. In 65 years, I'll still be less than 120 years old, I hope. It is the fifth month, just barely still, and in our 12-step program for active investors, the fifth step is manager pickers. All about why you shouldn't try to pick an active manager, because the chances are they're not going to beat the market anyway, and you're just wasting your money doing that. Well, here's my musical interpretation of step five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. A 12-step program for active investors. Step 5, manager pickers. My name is Paul, and I'm an active investor. I needed to select an investment for my 401k plan. Go! And based upon the past performance of some of those mutual funds, there were some glorious days. So I picked the one that was the best performer, but it's all over now. I was amazed at how great life was, but it's not anymore. Now I understand the day I picked that fund, lucky days were over. What'd you do? Don't you understand the day I found you, I was done. But I'll make it through. I just can't accept this situation. I've been sentenced for arrogance. I'm doing my time, paying for the crime, but I'm ready to carry on.
I can recall some glorious days, but it's all over now. I was amazed how great life was, but it's not anymore. And now I understand the day I met you. Lucky days were over. What did you do? And don't you understand? situation. I've been sentenced for arrogance. I've done my time, paid for my crime. Now I'm ready to carry on.
Like stock and time picking, manager picking is a worthless endeavor. However, there are still investors out there who believe they can select an all-star manager or financial guru who can beat the odds. Typically, investors first invest in a star fund run by a star manager when they read about the latest and greatest funds. Then they sell their investments within a few years when they become disenchanted by the fund's shoddy performance. Investors are seldom aware that active funds that have good performance histories are always riskier than the indexes they outperform. Also, outstanding performance histories can be surprisingly fragile. Few investors realize that the most important factor separating a winning performance history from a losing one is the choice of starting and ending dates. Finally, outstanding performance histories don't always reflect taxes or commission loads. Published mutual fund ratings are often pre-tax returns that disguise their true after-tax performance in taxable accounts. If you're trying to pick a mutual fund based upon its past performance, if you're trying to select an investment based upon its star rating, we're here to rescue you. We're here to bring you home.
Is there somewhere you can rescue me? Somewhere you can bring me home again? Somewhere you can rescue me? Rescue me.
This is Paul Douglas Boyer, saying it takes money to make money, and it takes regular money to make a mad money machine. I'll see you next Friday. In the meantime, please visit our sponsor that we love, 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 love so much here, Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. And for many of you that have taken not only my survey, right, the Mad Money Machine survey, but the Risk Capacity survey, I see in looking at the results so far of the Mad Money Machine survey, that some of you listeners have said in the survey results that you have not taken the risk capacity survey. Why not? Why are you not taking this survey, folks? There is no commitment. There's no personal information revealed. You don't have to put your name in. Now, at the end, you put in an email address. All right? And you know how these things work, right? You know how to put in an email address? They're not going to spam you to death. You can, if you want, check a box that they'll send you a weekly quote of the week, but you don't have to check it. But you get the results, and you see the answers to the questions that they ask you, and you can find out truly what your risk capacity is. It's the first thing you've got to know. Well, anyway, go take that risk capacity survey, and I expect that everyone listening will fill out my survey with a yes answer on that at some point, right? Some music on this show provided by the good folks at music.podshow or mevio.com. I love your feedback, not only in the survey, but at email, feedback@madmoneymachine.com, voicemail, 206-734-4763, comments in the show notes, or see me at Twitter, twitter.com/madmoneymachine, also on delicious.com/madmoneymachine, by the way. Have a great week, everybody. Stay invested.